When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
All right. And we're recording. Okay. So here we go. Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that hopes no matter how pretty it is, you won't erase it. It's Sif Pop. Welcome to Sif Pop, available in your podcast feed every Monday, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Because patrons get perks.
That's right. Patrons will get those early podcast perks. Woo. I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he wishes the marketing team of Megalopolis had made up fake movie review quotes for him. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy.
And each week we'll chat about movies, television, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. Hello, Andrew. What's on your mind today?
Not much. I'm feeling great.
Good. Good. Glad to hear it. I'm glad to hear it.
Nothing going wrong over here.
No sinus issues. Nothing happening. You won't notice anything in Andrew's voice today. We are excited, no matter what the case, to chat about a couple of things recently. I do want to say right out at the start here. Mm-hmm. We were off last week. We're going to be off like the next 3-4 weeks. I can't remember. It's going to be a while because I'm taking a big vacay. And so we're going to be off for a little bit. And there's quite a few, as I was looking at like what to talk about today, there were a lot of various directions we could have gone. Mm. And it's just one of those things where I think I'm not sure how I'm going to catch up.
Normally, this happens to you when award season is happening, but that's what I'm saying. You early.
That's what I'm saying because I'm going on vacation for a month. I've never done this before. I've never taken like an October vacation. I mean, I will be working and doing odds and ends here, but I won't be, around the home base. So when I get back, yeah, it'll be full on award season. Already, like it'll be almost November, so it's one of those things where it's like I'll see Transformers 1 when I get around to it, I guess, you know what I mean? Like, and I know there's good buzz on it, and there's been stuff like, you know, Blink Twice that came out that people were talking about for a hot second, and there's just all of these little ankle biter movies that, you know, have kind of come and gone. And it's just kind of a new season where I this year specifically, I've just had to go, okay, it's okay. You'll get around to seeing them eventually, you know, everything that you're meant to see. And I will say this, if you listen to this podcast and you've enjoyed like hearing our opinions on almost every single movie that comes out, I'd give us a follow on Letterboxd, because the ones that we don't hit on here on the podcast, if you're curious what we think about them, we'll, you know, at least I will probably, have a, you know, paragraph or so on Letterboxd that you can check out if you're curious what I think about some of this other stuff. Speak No Evil kind of made a few waves recently. The Brad Pitt, George, or yeah, is it Brad Pitt, George? Yeah, I know it's not out but it will be soon.
Yes, Wolves. Wolves.
So like there's all this stuff that's happening and will continue happening over the course of the next month. I mean, Joker's coming out while I'm gone, right? Like that's, you know, that's a big deal. So once I'm back, we'll hit what we can. We'll do our best and we'll kind of try to prioritize what we think most people will want to hear us talk about. And that's what I generally try to do. And I base that on a few things. One, I base it on popularity on Letterboxd, stuff that the most people are reviewing, those kind of things. I have noticed, and you'll notice today, like we're talking about Uglies today, right? You might think, well, why are you talking about Uglies instead of, you know, Transformers 1 or something like that? If Wait, you look what? On Letterboxd, Uglies is the number two most watched thing, you know, for the last couple weeks. Like, this movie is, because it's on Netflix, a lot of people are watching it. And so it's kind of trying to balance that whole thing of like, okay, should we be talking about what more people know about, or should we be talking about stuff that we might like more or might be more interesting? So I don't know. It's a fascinating little kind of exercise that we go through every week, trying to figure out, you know, what we want to talk about and those kind of things. But yeah, I think in this new season, I think that there's Letterboxd becomes a nice little outlet for the stuff that I don't get to talk about on the podcast. So kind of nice. Works out that way.
Can I ask you a fun question?
Oh no, no fun, please. Make it a difficult question, please.
Did you say that we're reviewing a movie called Uglies today?
Is that not correct? Is that not what the title is called?
It's Transformers 1 is the email that I got.
So oh no, you didn't see the update email?
No, I never got an update email. I swear, I never got one.
Well, welcome to an episode where we actually review three movies.
Hey,
Andrew will give his opinions on his non-spoiler opinions on Transformers 1, and I will give my non-spoiler opinions on Uglies. Look, it worked out. All that conversation and everything worked out. No, initially, like within an hour of sending the original email, I was like, actually, or no, it wasn't. It was a couple days later. Anyways, doesn't matter. For whatever reason, it didn't get to you. All right, so that's what's happening. We're going to be talking about three movies this week. We'll kind of make the
Final Artifact.
Yeah, the Final Artifact kind of a 1-2 punch between the two of us, and we'll just talk a little bit cool. about the movies we saw, which I actually don't mind that idea. That sounds kind of fun. We can do it that way. So let's get into it. Let's kick it off by doing some buried treasure. What is that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about? Andrew, what have you been watching?
So I've been sick this last week, so whenever I'm sick, I like to go back to my comfort foods, and I don't mean literally comfort foods. I mean the things that I know are going to work for me. So I was scrolling through HBO the other day, or Max, as it's now called, and I was watching The Penguin, and then after The Penguin was over, I'm not going to review The Penguin yet. Sometimes, you know, it says you might be interested in the show or whatever.
Right.
And it was a show that I hadn't seen in forever. The show has what I consider to be the best pilot for any show ever.
I'm going to say Lost.
No. Although Lost is in my top five pilots.
Yeah, that's a great pilot. I mean, a terrible pilot. Crashed and everything, but great show pilot.
I see what you did there. No, I'm going to go with The Newsroom.
Oh, yeah.
I love this show, particularly the first season. I think that Jeff Bridges is outstanding in this. Now, I'm going to say this up front. This is a very political show. It is a very left-leaning show. It does not, you know, hold its cards close to the chest. It lets you know what kind of show it is up front. So I want to be clear with everybody to make you not... I don't want you to think that I'm trying to convert you or to make you think a certain way, but it's interesting. It's an interesting show on how news breaks in a cable news network and how that news is facilitated through many people before it reaches the news desk, and how truth and opinion are two similar but very different things at the same time. And they try and, you know, let you know what's an opinion and what's a fact.
Yeah.
Great show, and it takes place in our world. So the news that's being broken is like the real news that happened, like Blackwater Horizon is in the pilot episode. The assassination attempt of one of the senators back in 2016, she was shot in the head, is in this. The killing of Osama bin Laden is in the show. Mm-hmm. It's a great first season. The second season's pretty good, and the third season kind of just falls off. But man, that first season is really good, and I recommend it to everyone.
Yeah, I'd recommend it as well. I really love that show. It's Sorkin, and yeah, I've got, you know, my Sorkin tendencies anyway, but I'm a bit of a Sorkin sexual, I guess. But but yeah, it's one of those things where the writing is so good, and when you cast people that can handle it, it just works really, really well. I don't remember as much of a quality fall off as you do. I remember it being great throughout, but yeah, Newsroom is great and on Max.
What do you have?
I'm gonna talk about something I've checked the first three episodes out of, and that's because that's all that's out right now, and that's Agatha All Along. I am having a really good time with this show. It'll be interesting to see how Marvel is able to do this new separation that they're kind of thinking, at least when you look at interviews and stuff that they're saying, that they're like, it was a mistake to try to tie everything in so directly. It was too much to try to do all the movies and all the TV shows, you know, leading towards the same thing. From now on, any TV shows we do on Disney Plus will be their own thing. And there's just part of me that's like, I don't believe you. Like, I think it's too ingrained in you, like, to connect things. And if a TV show hits, I think you're going to use it. I don't know. It's just one of those. I think the more accurate way to say it, in my estimation, in my instinct, is that they're going to quit planning it so intricately and kind of play it more by ear as far as how to incorporate things into the greater narrative. But watching Agatha, it's great. I'm really enjoying the performances, the humor, it's kind of a putting the team together episode in the first episode or the first couple episodes. And it's a really fun bunch. And I'm enjoying that there are still elements in the first and third, the first but very much so, the third even a little bit, of kind of the thing that made WandaVision fun, which is that it's like different genres, right? So, like, I'll just say this. In the first episode, it's a Mare of Easttown takeoff, you know, kind of any of the crime shows, you know, those kind of things, but it's specifically called like Agnes of Westwood. So it's clearly like Mayor of Easttown. And it works. It's fun. I love that little thing, and I'm glad they're continuing to kind of play in that territory a little bit. So we'll see where it goes. We'll see what they're doing. Marvel has a history of me loving their stuff for the first few episodes and then going, as it finishes. But, you know, we'll see how this one goes. So, yeah, I'd recommend Agatha All Along as my buried treasure.
So nice. I have not started it yet, but I planned to start it this weekend. So hearing the good things gets me excited.
Yep. And you remember in WandaVision where comic nerds were like, it's all Mephisto, and Mephisto never showed up? Well, guess whose name was mentioned in episode 3?
Hey!
Robert De Niro. No, I'm just kidding.
What?
Newsroom is on Max, and Agatha All Along is on Disney Plus.
Nice.
All right, let's head into the big dig. Let's talk about Megalopolis.
Imagine today's society as a branch of civilization about to reach a dead end. Is this way we're living the only one that's available to us? My plan is a city that people can dream about.
Megalopolis.
What about those standing in your way?
Power the people!
Who like it the way it is?
People don't need dreams. People need help now.
Genius artist Caesar Catalina seeks to leap the city of New Rome into a utopian, idealistic future, while his opposition, Mayor Franklin Cicero, remains committed to a regressive status quo, perpetuating greed, special interests, and partisan warfare. Torn between them is socialite Julia Cicero, the mayor's daughter, whose love for Caesar has divided her loyalties, forcing her to discover what she truly believes humanity deserves. This is Francis Ford Coppola's Vanity project. That's probably the quickest way to say this is something he's been dreaming about, talking about for a long, long time, financed it primarily himself, got it to theaters himself. He needed this to happen, and so he made it happen. Stars Adam Driver, and there's some other people in there, of course, that you might know. Giancarlo Esposito among them. What did you think, Andrew? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
It was just okay.
And I agree.
I say that only because I have high highs and low lows for this movie. So I'm just going to come down straight and just okay.
Yeah, that's very similar to how I felt about it. But why don't you start? What are some of your overall thoughts?
It's a confounding movie.
It really is.
I want to get that out right up front. Maybe it's just because I've been sick all week. This is a very confusing movie. Tonally, I don't know where this movie wants to go, what it wants to say. I think the moral of the film has something to do with man's reach and man's ambition, and how it deals and how society deals with an auteur who is just too brilliant for them, I guess. It's a very confusing movie. I walked out of the movie theater thinking some of the visual effects were brilliant. The acting was on point from everybody. But I don't have a lot to say about this one. It didn't impact me because I was lost.
Yeah. Yeah. Very similar as to how I felt. I think you mentioned the tone thing, which I think will end up being one of the biggest negatives, although the movie is messy in more than just tone. It's also messy in structure, in editing, in plot, and it feels like it needed more cohesive focus somewhere, whether that be in what it's trying to say, how it's trying to say it, or how to direct the actors acting in it. The tone thing is a big deal because Adam Driver is in a completely different movie than Shia LaBeouf. They are like, it just feels like they're in two different films. Shia is in a movie with like John Voight, kind of gives the same tone to his performance that he's giving. And
theatrical.
Yeah. Very over the top, very weird. You know, Lawrence Fishburne and Adam Driver in a different movie. You know, Giancarlo Esposito is probably more with the Adam Driver, Lawrence Fishburne movie. And then, you know, Dustin Hoffman is basically doing nothing. And then Jason Schwartzman thinks he's still in a Wes Anderson film. Like, you know, I don't know. It feels it's so hard to find your way into something that is this tonally disparate. So I definitely had a difficulty with that.
I have a theory, and it's going back to what you were talking about in the opening when you were describing the movie, that this was Coppola's passion project. He financed it himself. Mm-hmm. He did all these things himself. Whenever you have an artist like this who has earned everything that they've accomplished,
sure,
you know, all the movies that Coppola's done, infamous, you know? So it's difficult to rein in. I guess it would be difficult for somebody else to feel obligated to rein in and say, hey, maybe tone it back a little bit or maybe tweak this a little bit, you know? And I could imagine, this is all, you know, hypothetical, by the way, that Coppola would say something like, nope, this is my project. I want to make the movie I want to make. And that's fine, but at the same time, I'm paying for a movie ticket and I want my movies to make sense. Mm-hmm. And if they don't make sense, let the message be more important than the meaning of the movie.
Well, but I think that's what Coppola thinks. I think Coppola thinks the message is the driver here, pardon the pun, as opposed to Adam. That the message is the part of the movie that is supposed to shine through. I don't think he realizes that he didn't get everything in his head onto the screen. Like that it doesn't feel like he communicated, you know, what he was trying to do with, I mean, it's clear what he's trying to do in some ways. He's trying to compare the fall of Rome to modern America in saying, if we don't change something, we're going to fall too. Yeah. You know, we're on the same path they are. That's first of all, not really a new thought, by the way. You know, like, you know, the idea that where we are in America is a turning point for this American experiment is not something that he's, you know, alone in thinking about and talking about. The direct metaphorical stuff isn't clear enough for me to draw enough ties to, you know, what he's thinking about modern America. And like, there's no real solution in the metaphor, right? There's no real idea of here's how you don't go down this road of political corruption and, you know, false narratives and these kind of things. It's just more like a mirror in some ways.
Yeah, he kind of tries to answer it with Megalon, which is this new building material which is supposed to save humanity. But it's such an unexplained MacGuffin that you don't really see anything of value in it.
Well, I honestly think it's this appeals to me on some level. I think it's a pie-eyed optimism that's going on in the towards the end of the movie. I think the idea of Megalopolis, he's saying utopia is something we can work together to achieve, but we have to, you know, be able to understand what it's for. You know, the movie is very intent on the next, let's just say the next generation, being a part of the motivation for getting it right. And I just don't know. To go, hey, we can live in a utopia is different than going, here's how we start getting there. And I just don't think the movie really gives us any kind of metaphorical or literal substance to hold on to go, oh, I see, other than the very generic love will find a way. You know, like that's, if you're going to find, like it's, you know, love is the answer. And believe me, I believe that. That's actually deep in my heart. But it just seems so paper thin in this movie. It just seems like something, you know, somebody saying and not something somebody showing me. Show me why love is the answer. Don't just, you know, say it. And I think that's another reason that this movie ultimately fails is it just says stuff. It doesn't really show stuff. And in fact, a lot of the stuff that it says, and I don't mean this in a cinematography way, I just mean this in a philosophical way. A lot of the stuff that it says is stuff we've heard before, sometimes not even adapted, like the idea of why are you making money to spend on things you don't want to impress people you don't like? That's not something.
I love that quote.
It's a great quote, but this movie quotes it like it's its own quote and doesn't even change a word. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And so and there are several moments like that that just take quotes and go, now this movie's going to say this thing that other people have said. And it just... I don't know. It just makes everything feel paper thin to me. And again, if this is one of those movies that reveals itself after seven watches or something and something clicks and you're like, oh, Coppola was a genius, then I'll take it all back. But I don't think that's in here. I just think it's messy. And so it's hard for it all to hold together.
I see glimpses into what I think he wants to say. And when I say that, I mean, I feel Coppola is trying to say so many things with this movie. He doesn't have just one message. Or not one message, but you have like characters who are supposed to be, what would you call it? When you're making an example of, through metaphor of somebody, like they're...
Like analogous?
Analogous, thank you. You have analogous of characters like the Aubrey Plaza character is corporate greed.
Mm-hmm,
and right. Then you have the John Voight character who's the analogous for corrupt banking officials. Mm-hmm. You have so many of these analoguses that he's pointing. It feels like Coppola is pointing at them going, look, see, that's what they're doing. But the characters don't develop in a way that you see it either benefiting the future or moving past their own indiscretions and seeing where their faults lie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm watching this movie and I'm just seeing representations is another, probably what I was looking for, representations of, you know, analoguses, instead of seeing character development and plot driving factors.
I think there are some good things to talk about with this movie. And
oh, sure.
I think there are some shots in this movie that I found genuinely awe-inspiring. I think some of the ways the camera is used, some of the angles, some of the different choices are all very interesting to me. Some of the intercutting that's going on here is interesting to me. I also think Adam Driver's giving a great performance in this movie, too. And again, it's one of the frustrating parts of the tonal disparity is the movie that Driver's in could be a really like good movie. And then you cut to Chloe Fineman, who's in a completely different movie, you know, with whatever the daughter characters are doing in this movie. And it just doesn't work. And what's interesting is it's not like Driver has been given different tonal material necessary to work with. I just think he understands how to give the silliness that's inherent in a lot of what's going on here a gravitas that makes it feel more authentic. So like he will say, like Adam Driver's character says several silly things in this movie, and comedic things and funny things and, you know, witty asides or whatever, but he knows how to do it in a way that still feels authentically important, if that makes sense. Whereas other characters are more in a straight up shticky comedy with the way that they're, you know, using their roles.
If you're talking about the Shia LaBeouf character and the sisters and John Voight, is that who you're talking about?
Mostly talking about the sisters, Schwartzman, and Voight. Shia bridges the gap better than they do, I think. Shia has some moments where he's able to find that gravitas and to actually do some depth in acting. But it's inconsistent. He's a little more inconsistent than Driver is, I think. Driver is pretty consistent with his ability to do it. So that's my opinion.
No. I found the Shia character to be probably the most fascinating character in the entire movie.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Not like he's a good guy or anything like
right,
that.
Right, the Claudio character. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. But to see that, it felt very Shakespearean in a way, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This character who has had everything and yet still desires more and greed and all these different factors that lead into him being him. Mm-hmm. I think Shia did a great performance in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I think he was better than most at finding it.
Better than most, but I do agree that nobody's style of acting meshed with a cohesive idea of what the tone of the movie should be.
Well, and again, some of them are just kind of like their performances just feel like toast. They just don't feel like much. Like I'm thinking of, like I mentioned Hoffman, his performance is nothing in this movie, in my opinion. Like he's not given a lot to do and he doesn't do it in any kind of, in my opinion, you know, interesting way. And then the primary one is Julia, the Nathalie Emmanuel. I just thought that was a toast performance. I didn't feel anything from her, even in moments where I should have felt something. The other decent performance that I would pull out is Aubrey Plaza. She's definitely doing some interesting things here that again try to bridge that gap, but her performance felt very similar to Shia's to me. It felt inconsistent.
I don't know. So. I actually think that it was fairly what was inconsistent about it?
No, tonally, there are times when I'll just take the Aubrey Plaza character as an example. Yeah. Shia has the same thing. Tonally, there are times when she is in a comedy. She's just in a straight up comedy. Some of the news reporter stuff. Some of the, you know, the deliveries on some of the lines. And there are other times where she's in a drama and doing like, you know, real dramatic chops kind of stuff. And they just feel tonally different to me. Like they're from different movies. And so it's hard to bridge that gap. Whereas with Adam Driver, I felt like he understood In every moment, even when he was being silly and comedic, I still felt it was authentically attached to the entire character in a way that I didn't with anybody else.
Hmm. So, yeah. I guess I was just thinking that the Aubrey Plaza character, Wow Platinum, is the character name, by the way. Mm-hmm. Great character name. I just thought that Aubrey Plaza was portraying someone who was intentionally fake. Mm-hmm. So, like, whenever I saw her doing, like, the news reports or things like that that were comedic, I saw an actor who was putting on a facade for the character.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then whenever you had those moments where that was the real dramatic scenes, that was the real Wow Platinum.
Mm.
So, it could just be me.
No, and that's how perspective can change things too. And you know, I'm fully willing to admit that my perspective could be impacting my view of that. But also the other thing about it is that it's easier to lose sight narratively and perspective wise in a movie that's messy. When a movie is messy, it's easier to go, I'm lost, and that also impacts this. I don't understand this part, so I'm also a little bit put off by this part. Like, it impacts the whole thing, right? So when a movie feels this structurally unsound and confusing, right? This is a confusing movie. Am I wrong about that? It feels like a confusing movie.
That was the first thing I said whenever we were reviewing this. This is a confusing movie.
So when a movie's confusing, that can impact everything. That can impact your perspective on just about anything. So in a better movie, maybe the performance works like gangbusters for me, but maybe because it's in this movie, it's harder for me to put it together in that way.
Yeah, the movie has so much going on in every single scene that it's easy to lose sight of one thing, and that one thing could turn out to be vital later on, and it's just lost, and then you're lost for the rest of the movie.
Yep. Any final thoughts on Megalopolis before we finish up?
I would love to spend a day in Coppola's mind whenever he was writing this, because he had to have gone some places, not like trippy psychedelic stuff, but he had to have been thinking of some weird stuff whenever he came up with this, and I would just like to have been part of it.
My final thought, my one last thing, is that I would not be surprised if we see another version of this movie that's 3.5 hours at some point.
A Snyder cut.
If we get an Apocalypse Now kind of situation where the movie just keeps getting, you know,
re-released
in different ways. But you can't call it a director's cut because this is the director's cut. Like, you know,
oh, yeah.
He did all this. So, you know, nobody was telling him what he could and couldn't put in here.
But I
believe we might get an extended cut, and maybe that'll make it better. Maybe that'll make it more understandable. You never know.
Who knows? And also, like you said, it could be one of those things where after like a third or fourth or even a fifth view, you can really start to appreciate and things might line up for you. You never know.
I'm going to have to hear somebody else say it before I even give this a second view, if I'm being honest. I just don't know that I want to go through it again. But it actually, I thought it was going to be like 3 hours. I thought I had heard it was going to be like a 3-hour movie, but it was only, I mean, it was just over two. So it wasn't too bad. It was like 2:15, 2:20, something like that.
I felt the time though.
Yeah. Yeah. That's unfortunate. I did too. That is Megalopolis. And you can check that out in theaters.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, let's head into our best ever challenge this week. The best ever challenge this week is going to be best ever movies directed by somebody over 80. Octogenarian movies. And it's wild how many of these there are. And in fact, as I was doing the research, and maybe some of these will be on your list, as I was doing the research, it was a little bit of like list of shame for me. Like I would go through and I'd be like, oh, I haven't seen that movie Kurosawa made after he was 80, or I haven't seen that movie that such and such made after. But there are a lot of directors who kept making movies well into their 80s. And of course, modern directors, we've got, you know, several, I mean a handful. You know, Woody Allen is still making movies in his 80s. Clint's still making movies in his 80s. Scorsese's 90s. Now in his... Yeah, Clinton is not correct. Scorsese's still making movies, and he's now in his 80s. So, yeah, it's interesting because you look... And I'm guessing Spielberg will make movies once he's in his 80s. So, we'll, you know, people kind of just keep on going. Ridley Scott's still making movies in his 80s. Gladiator 2's about to come out. So... it'll be interesting to hear this list. Let's just do some nominations. Let's do four. Let's do four nominations each. See if we can get eight on the board and then pick one and see how that goes. If you don't feel like you have four, we can do three. But either way.
Because you were talking about list of shame. I scraped the bottom of the barrel to find movies. So yeah. Not that these are bad movies, but like the number I could come up with was very slim.
Okay, well, I will let you start then, so that make sure that you get to get the first pick. What's your first nomination for Best Octogenarian Director Movie?
Let's go with Ridley Scott in The Last Duel.
I agree. It was his first movie he made after he was 80, yes. And then he's made this. Gladiator 2 will be his fourth movie that he's made after, because he made the Gucci movie, right? Was yes, him?
Yes, House of Gucci.
House of Gucci, and then there was another one.
Well, House of Gucci came out the same year The Last Duel did, didn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there's been one. Didn't he just have a movie come out? Maybe I'm thinking of somebody else.
Well, I just want to make sure. He didn't direct the new Alien movie.
Oh, Napoleon. But... Napoleon.
Oh, right. I'm a fool. Yes.
Yeah, Napoleon also came out. So, but I think The Last Duel is the best of those. So I think that's a good nominee. And by the way, we can nominate the same director a couple times if we want to. So we can do that. My first nomination, and I'll try to go with one maybe that you wouldn't put on here, but I think deserves to be on the list. I'm going to go with Stephen Frears, who was 81 when he directed The Lost King a couple years ago. I don't know if you've seen The Lost King, but it's a really good movie, and it kind of flew under the radar, and Frears is a great director. But yeah, it is Sally Hawkins, Steve Coogan, and it's a really interesting story. So yeah, check out The Lost King. I think it belongs on this list. I will nominate it for my first nomination. What's your next one?
Stephen Frears did Philomena. Okay, I was trying to remember where else I'd ever seen him from, mm-hmm. or seen his work from. A guy whose work I know I have seen is Clint Eastwood.
Mm-hmm. Which one are you going with?
Well, for this first one, it's one I guarantee he was in his 80s that he did, and that's Sully.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was 86 when Sully came out.
I think that this is a fascinating movie. Look into the life of Captain Sully Sullenberger. And I think Tom Hanks and Aaron Eckhart give great performances in this one, too.
I agree. This would have been the Clint movie I picked, too.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it would have been the Clint movie everybody picked, but I would have picked Sully. I really like Sully. I think it's great.
Nice.
I'm going to go for my next nomination. Let's go with Prairie Home Companion. Robert Altman.
Prairie Home Companion. You're just making my list of shame.
This was Altman's last film, I believe. I think he was 81. And yeah, it's not perfect, but it's good. And it's really interesting. Crazy good cast. And it captures the feeling of that radio show in an interesting way. So yeah, I'd go with it. Kind of has a little bit of a Coen Brothers feel to it because of that. But yeah, if you haven't seen Prairie Home Companion, I would check it out. It's good stuff.
All right. Another one added to the list. Yeehaw.
I'm trying to pick the ones that you wouldn't necessarily pick, because I don't want to steal any from you, because I know you have so few.
Yes.
What do you got for your third nom?
I'm going to go with Martin Scorsese, Killers of the Flower Moon.
Wait, I thought he was 79 when he made that. Or when it came out.
Well, then we got a whole bunch of gurus who have a lot to answer for them as well. let's put it on their list.
Let's do the math. So Scorsese was born on November 17th, 1942. So he would have been 80 on November 17th, 1922. And when did Killers come out?
You're asking me a question, and now there's a big gap.
I can do it. Killers came out in 23, so I think it counts.
Okay.
It's just one of those things where, like, was he 80 when he was making it? Maybe not. But let's go by release date.
Ooh.
In which case he had turned 81. So by the time it came out. So yeah, we'll count.
One more.
I've just added to my list. All right, we'll put Killers on the list, and for Scorsese. All right.
Your okay. Final one? Oh, wait. No, you still have two more, I think.
I do. I'm going to throw The Boy and the Heron on here, nice. Miyazaki's last movie. And I mean, talked about it recently enough, but... I think it's my favorite Miyazaki. I think it's just incredible. I think
really?
It's beautiful. Yeah, I think it's beautiful and really makes you think about stuff. And yeah, I love it.
Well, it's one that I am ashamed to say I haven't seen, but I love Miyazaki and I will check it out.
All right, what's your fourth?
He directed it when he was 79 and he starred in it when he was 79, but it came out... I'm pretty sure because of late production, Clint Eastwood's Gran Torino.
Wait, that was like 2008, wasn't it?
The guy's 94, dude.
Man.
We can do the math. Let's do the math.
Yeah, let's do the math.
Gran Torino came out in 2008.
What day?
The date, let's scroll down to release date. January 9th, 2009 is when it came out. So not 2008, 2009.
Well, it came out for award season, right? So its official release date is a little bit later. But yeah, that's either way, it doesn't matter. So he would have been 79 when it came out.
Oh, well, poop.
Yeah, because he was born in 1930. So 30. May 31st.
1930.
May 31st of 2010 is when he turned 80. So he would have been 79 when it came out.
Okay. Well, then I got nothing.
Alrighty then. I'll just throw one more Clint in there so that we can have two Clints, because he's probably the best example of this anyway. I will throw American Sniper in there.
I could have gone with that. Yeah, I have seen it.
I think that's the one that many people would go with for his 80 plus movies. I also like Richard Jewell. I don't think Richard Jewell would be a bad choice either.
My whole list could have just been Clint Eastwood. I went with Gran Torino just because it was my favorite, but I've seen like only his last two movies have been met on The Mule and whatever his other one was.
Yeah. All right. Well, that gives us seven, right? Yes, seven movies. So
your final one.
Well, I did American Sniper.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Shouldn't we end up with... okay, we are ending up with seven then.
With seven, yes. We'll end up with seven, which is fine. So what do we think? What's the best of these movies directed by 80 people? 80 people. People, someone who is over 80. Last Duel, Lost King, Sully, Prairie Home Companion, Killers of the Flower Moon, American Sniper, or The Boy and the Heron? Which of these is the best movie? What do you think?
Last Duel's really good, but is it the best? It's better. It's my favorite of the ones I nominated. And I feel terrible because I haven't seen the two that you nominated, but I have seen the other two Clint Eastwoods, American Sniper, and...
The only one that you haven't seen that I would put into discussion with The Last Duel, because I think that might be the best on this list.
The Boy and the Heron.
Is The Boy and the Heron. That actually probably would be my choice, but I know you haven't seen it, so...
I'm not going to lie. I'm more than okay with it being the pick if you are adamant about it. Otherwise, I would go with The Last Duel. I love The Last Duel.
I shall be adamant about it. We'll go with The Boy and the Heron. And then when you see The Boy and the Heron, if you disagree, let's have another conversation and fight
it out. You know what? I'll watch it tonight. I got nothing else to do.
There you go. There you go. So The Boy and the Heron, we're going to say, is the best ever movie directed by an octogenarian. Which, you know, once Clint's making movies in his 90s, we won't be able to say, because he'll be a nonagenarian at that point. And he's not, by the way, not the only one who's ever made movies in his 90s. So
I looked it up. I found 102 year
old. Oldest. Yeah.
Obviously haven't seen the movie, but wow. 102. Yeah,
definitely. Cool stuff. All right, there you go. They're the best over movies made by octogenarians. All right, let's get to the final artifact. A little bit different today. We've got different final artifacts.
Yeah.
Andrew, why don't you go first and tell us about Transformers 1.
Where's Optimus Prime?
The filthy red and blue bot? Gives off a corroded metallic stench.
Okay, corroded, that is too far.
Okay. When two worlds divide, get hard to survive.
Transforming bats in the sky. You have the power to make your world better. But this fight is mine.
I really liked it. Like, close to loving it. It's my favorite Transformers movie now.
I've heard good things.
The reason why I like it is because this is how you do an origin story without exposition. There's a lot of you're introduced to Optimus Prime and Megatron before they became Transformers. They were just originally robots from their planet, and they became Transformers later on, and they were actually best friends. So you get to see this friendship between I'm gonna look up what their actual robot names were. I should have had this prepped, sorry. So Megatron's real name was D16, and then Optimus Prime's real name was Orion Pax. Star-studded cast. Everybody is amazing in this, with the exception of Chris Hemsworth, who plays Optimus Prime, because there's a couple times that his Australian accent really seeps through.
Mm.
And towards the end of this movie, it feels like he's doing an impression of Peter Cullen as opposed to making the character his own.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can really feel him doing, "I am Optimus Prime," you know?
Right.
And you're like, "Oh, you're just doing a Peter." It's good. Don't get me wrong. Like, it sounds like Peter Cullen, but I would have liked to have it.
You'd like Optimus Prime to be like, "Hey guys, what's up?"
Yeah. You want
more like,
yeah, I wanted, instead of having Steve Buscemi be Starscream, have Steve Buscemi be Optimus Prime.
There is a funny balance to, if you're voicing something iconic like that, you kind of have to keep a lot of the original idea, at least behind the voice. Otherwise, everybody's going to hate it. You know what I mean? Like, but yeah, it'd be tricky to find a way to make it your own.
Yeah. The movie humanizes Transformers in a way that I didn't expect, because
I believe you mean anthropomorphizes, considering they are not human.
Yes, so, there's not a single human in this entire movie.
Mm.
It does not take place on Earth. It takes place on their original planet. Yeah, and it's just, you see this interesting power dynamic of, you know, the cities and the different types of robots that live on this planet. I had a great time. The only con I would have is I think that the ending was a little bit rushed. And not that I don't think that the inevitable fall between Megatron and Optimus Prime wasn't... I didn't feel like it was rushed. I felt like it was... No, I take that... stupid brain, I'm so sick right now. I don't feel like it wasn't earned, because it was earned. I felt like it was rushed. There we go. Now I got it out.
Yeah.
But star-studded cast, all the performances, really good.
I'm excited to see it. So now I'm going to ask you a couple questions.
Please.
Do you feel like this movie understands that one of the most interesting and fun parts of Transformers is the transforming? And what I mean by that is, does the movie honor the idea of robot, then this other thing, in a not only a practical way, but also in a creative way?
Yes and no. Okay. If you're looking for the cool transformations, like, oh, I can see that there's a truck hiding inside of the Optimus Prime body, you're not going to get that, because they're not on Earth. There's nothing for them to imitate, if that makes sense.
Okay, yeah, that does make sense.
If they...
So they're not the Transformers we know then, like physically.
No.
Okay.
What
are they then?
They're just robots. And they...
Oh.
I don't want to get too much into it.
Why do they look like humans? Okay, sorry. You don't have to spoil anything.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out why they just aren't...
Oh, if you're asking
like
why they're... Why they have human characteristics.
Yeah.
You gotta ask Hasbro, bro.
Yes, Hasbro, bro.
But no, and whenever they do transform, it's not as bad as the Michael Bay, a whole bunch of glitches, and now it's something else. There's a little bit more thought put into it, but at the same time, it's not like, ooh, robots in disguise, you know?
Yeah, but they do. So they do transform, even though they're not.
Yeah, it's like a.
I'm looking at a poster, and it looks like Optimus Prime. Looks like the truck, Optimus Prime.
Yeah, but at the same time,
like his chest still looks like the windshield.
And yeah, his chest will look like the windshield and everything, but it's not like he never transforms into the semi. Spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, but that's going to be a lot of distracting world stuff that I'll have to shut that part of my brain off.
Like, I think they have an understanding of the concept of transportation vehicles. Like, in their world, they have cars and planes and everything like that for the robots who can't transform.
Right.
And now they are able to transform, because they're just mining robots. That's all they are.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't know if any of this is canon or if this is all made up for the movie. Regardless, it was a fascinating story I had a really good time with.
So I'm looking at the voice cast. Chris Hemsworth, you mentioned. Brian Tyree Henry, Scarlett Johansson, Steve Buscemi, John Hamm, Lawrence Fishburne. It's Lawrence Fishburne week here.
Yes.
John
Hamm was great, by the way.
Keegan-Michael Key. That's a lot of voices we already know. Is it distracting, like, that we know what all these people look like, so we know somebody's in a recording booth? Like, would this have been better with, you know, voice actors that were doing performances?
I look at it like I look at the Lego movie. I know it's them, but I don't care because they're doing a good enough job.
Okay. All right.
If that makes sense.
That is fair. That is definitely fair. Okay. Well, that is Transformers 1. It is out in theaters. Do you have anything else you wanted to say about it?
Two post-credit scenes.
Oh, there you go. Two post-credit scenes.
Yes.
All right. And I will talk about, for the final artifact, I'll talk about Uglies.
Nice.
I wanted to be pretty. I thought it would change everything. I hope that's still true.
For those of you turning 16 today, you've waited your entire lives for this moment. All the flaws you have today will be gone tomorrow. With one elegant procedure, you'll be beautiful. Because everyone is accepted, no one is left behind.
Uglies is on Netflix. It is, let's see, it's the story. I have the written out description here, but since I didn't have one for yours, I feel it would feel weird to do one for mine. So I'll just say it in my own words, which is this is a future dystopia where everyone is so focused on beauty standards that plastic surgery has become mandated at a certain age. So that's basically the idea. And then the movie attempts to deals with the, you know, kind of the messages and tones within all that. Joey King stars in it. And then not necessarily a ton of people you would know. It is on Netflix. It is getting a lot of watch buzz, but it is terrible. This movie is terrible. I hated it. And I think the reason primarily comes down to the irony that a movie with this message feels so cookie cutter and, you know, every teen dystopian movie ever. Like, you know how they say this movie could have been written by AI?
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time I've actually watched a movie and gone, you know what? If a year from now Netflix said, you know what we did? We made that entire movie by AI. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, it generally just feels like cut and paste of every trope you've ever seen in one of these kind of movies, whether it be the Divergent series, the Twilight series, you know, whatever you're talking about, Maze Runner. It feels like it just stole bits and pieces from all of those. The world building is not that interesting. The concept is so clearly preachy that it just negates any impact that it could have, any way to make you think about something. Like, it doesn't understand its concepts enough to really explore them. The idea, if, you know, if everybody had to look quote unquote beautiful, the idea of what makes someone beautiful is interesting to me. This movie doesn't even wave at that. It just goes, you know, I want a better nose. I want better eyes. Okay, sure. Yeah. But deeper than that, where does attraction, beauty, you know, those kind of things come from? And why, when there are different cultures that have different standards of beauty, even within the United States of America, how did we as this culture determine what that is? And, you know, there are diverse cultures who have had quote unquote the surgery, and they all look different. Like, you know, why, like, this movie just never cares to explore any of that. And so it was really frustrating to me, because it's preaching about this idea that I'm very passionate about, which is the idea of body positivity, body image, body pressure, all that kind of, you know, appearance pressure, all that kind of stuff. And yet it's so preachy and didactic that it never even allows for any kind of exploration. It's just like, oh, the people that want to change everybody to look pretty are the bad people, and the, you know, the people that want to keep their nose are the good people. And it just doesn't go do anything. Now, it ends in a way that it's clear they want to make this a series.
Oh no.
And that's extremely frustrating as well, especially because of where it chooses to end. So yeah, I just had a bad experience with this. I feel like a lot more thought needed to be put into the world building to really, pardon the pun, flesh that out in a way that made sense. So yeah. So there you go. That's my review on Netflix Uglies.
Are there any redeeming qualities in this, like visual effects or performances or anything like that? That you can say, this kept me from just turning it off.
Well, having to review it on the podcast kept me from turning it off. Mm. I would say that I like Joey King. Mm-hmm. I think she's good. I just unfortunately think she's in a bad situation in this movie. And I think the visuals are only interesting in that they're futuristic. So they're only interesting to me in that, oh, you know, this is a future world. This is how they're envisioning this. Oh, that's kind of cool. You've got a vest you can put on and, you know, it becomes a jumpsuit or, you know, whatever. Like that kind of stuff is sometimes interesting. Just none of it really means anything. That's, you know, that's the problem. And yeah, so was not a big fan overall.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. Yep.
It is a McG movie, and I have never really been a fan of his work.
That's true. It is a McG movie. I forgot to mention that. There you go. That is Uglies. It is on Netflix, if you want to check that one out. But don't. All right, we did it. We did a podcast.
Woo!
Maybe not the one I thought we were going to do, but we did one. And,
not the one I thought we were going to do either.
And we had it. We made it work.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
Much love and gratitude to our Sif Pop members. We really do appreciate you. You can check all that out at patreon.com/SifPop if you want to see what that's all about. Lots of ways to connect with us. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. You can email us at feedback@SifPop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too. So let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than stopping time without the help of the power of love. We'll be back in about a month, actually. 3 or 4 weeks. Going to take some time off.
Wow.
But we'll see you towards the end of October, beginning of November, and we'll talk movies then. Bye.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.